Greetings, fellow investigators, and welcome back to our video podcast, Into the Darkness, where my friends and I play the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. I'm your host, Tom Rayleigh. Our campaign is Horror on the Orient Express, and this is episode 58. I'm your game master, and Jeff Wilkins will be giving the recap. Our characters are in the kingdom of the Serbs, Croats, and Slovenes. The players are ready. Let's begin our journey into the darkness. Jeff?
Thanks, Tom. The current date is February 9th, 1923. Our investigators are on board the Orient Express. We're headed towards Belgrade with a scheduled arrival of 12:53 p.m. in the afternoon. We started off discussing amongst ourselves a lot of the story and the adventure that we've been through, trying to piece together all the clues to figure out where we are and what still needs to be accomplished. Perhaps one of the most disturbing ideas was brought up by Eldridge, that just maybe Smythe and Beddoes are part of the Skinless Cult, and that we've been duped into helping them recover all the statue pieces and the scrolls. It seems odd that we're supposed to bring all the pieces together at the origin point in Constantinople. We decided to try to keep our paranoia at bay, and yet we shall still remain on the lookout in case something does seem out of the ordinary. Upon arriving in Belgrade, we receive a new telegram from Beddoes and Smythe, and it has been encoded in a cipher form. With Eldridge's keen mind, he solves the cipher quickly. It's a series of warnings. Simulacrum drains energy. Illness will grow worse. Distance will make illness worse. Death will result unless simulacrum is destroyed. Those that have left the party are dead. One other important idea is learned. It seems that Beddoes and Smythe are also traveling along with us on some sort of parallel route. This comes as a surprise to us all. Once we settle into the hotel, we head out to see more of Belgrade. We visit the local marketplace. Rupert notices a shop that sells knickknacks, and on the back shelf, he sees what looks like a ceramic arm. It looks like the simulacrum. Dr. Keith steps up and starts to ask the shop owner to see it. Just as Dr. Keith is about to look at it, a man with a bushy mustache of Middle Eastern descent grabs it and runs out into the crowd. We all give chase. We eventually catch up to the man. Eldridge punches him in the thigh, and the man drops the ceramic arm. It hits Eldridge right in the head and then shatters into a million pieces. The man is grabbed by the crowd. The police whistles sound. The proprietor of the shop grabs us and warns us that we do not want to stick around and get involved with the police. And that brings us up to date.
Perfect. So, the shopkeeper and a couple of the people who are with him, they hustle you off of the main thoroughfare and back to their tent shop. And they kind of hustle you into the back. The place, I guess, where they would rest or they would take their lunch break or whatever. It's out of the direct view of the crowd that's outside, and the guy seems mostly concerned with Eldridge after getting smashed in the head by that thing, by that ceramic arm. So he has you guys make yourselves comfortable, and he brings you, fresh cold water, and offers to make you tea. And is profusely apologizing for this. He says, you know, there are criminals, but, you know, we're not all bad.
Well, what was that all about? Was it very valuable, that arm?
No, not really.
He seemed rather keen to get hold of it.
I would suggest that you check your pockets and stuff. It may have simply been a ruse to get you out and not paying attention to your pockets.
Then Rupert and I shall do exactly that. I mean, checking our own pockets. We're not going to check each other's pockets.
Right.
That wouldn't be seemly.
Why don't you all do luck rolls?
No, maybe out of 45.
All right. If you failed, you do find that something was missing from your pocket. We'll just say in the form of some cash. Your wallet or whatever identification you have is still fine.
Luck. Well, Rupert got 41 and his luck is 42.
He can tell that it looks like somebody had their hand in his pocket to get the wad of cash that he carries, but that the wad was too big and so they couldn't get it out without him noticing.
Oh, and Elizabeth got a 2. No one was interested in going remotely near her purse. She didn't look like she's got anything worth stealing. Either that, or they were so taken aback by her flailing her umbrella about that no one got a chance.
Does Dr. Keith have a look about her? Like, you don't want to mess with this broad.
She does, yes. Okay. She has a look about her as though she's a capable woman with a substantial right hook. That's the look she gives.
So after entertaining you for 5 or 6 minutes, what would you guys like to do? Eldridge is not feeling too good. He took a nasty blow to the head, but he'll probably recover, you know, within a little bit. He doesn't want to go back to the hotel or anything, unless you all do.
Does the shop owner, can I ask him, the piece that he took and that was destroyed, is there anything he can tell us about it? It was somewhat unusual, and just wondering if there's any sort of a story behind it.
He doesn't really have any clear information on it. He's like, you know, you like this sort of thing, this piece. You know, we have a museum here with incredibly beautiful stuff. The whole region here, it was once in the Roman Empire, and they had, as you know, they had a way of spreading out and putting artwork everywhere. And there are many places in Serbia, actually, you wouldn't call it Serbia, Yugoslavia, that are almost completely untouched by the Western world, at least until the war, the last war.
Oh, yes.
But there are some fine pieces. And he says, most of this stuff that I have is just reproductions. You know.
Top quality reproductions. Sorry.
Do you know, Vinny, where this, the particular piece that was stolen and, I guess, destroyed, do you know where the original piece may be?
I have no idea, no.
Do you know who makes these replicas that you sell?
He does, but they're all just cheap, like plaster knockoffs. Maybe some of them originally were pieces that, you know, came from actual statues. But he's kind of he's not like the high up owner. He's just a guy. You know?
He's just a guy that works there.
Just some guy, you know.
The stock boy.
And he says there are experts in this sort of thing at the museum, but you know.
Are there any dealers who sell bona fide antiquities?
He's like, I don't know. And of course, you also get the impression that he's not going to tell you any of his competition. And he basically says to you, please rest. And he has to go back to work, but you are welcome to stay for however you long. And he apologizes and once again, he makes sure that you have refreshments and then he goes back to work. He seems at the same time, very trusting and completely dishonest. I mean, he's a salesperson, so.
Well, gentlemen, would you care to go to the museum and have a look?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
It sounds, sounds rather interesting, actually.
I think you picked up on what I was getting at, where it seems odd that he would have a replica similar to what we're looking for. As if it was copied or something, or somebody's making duplicates.
Well, here's the thing. I think, is the guy around, or did he just leave and go back to his shop?
He's literally just on the other side of some drapery,
Okay.
It's between the outs, the inside the booth and the behind the booth.
I'm going to say this sort of in a hushed tone. I think that was more or less like a diversion just to see who might be looking for this particular piece. I don't know. I feel like it was more or less like a setup, like the person who stole this thing. He sort of grinned at us when we caught up to him. And I'm thinking that it was a setup just to draw us out, more or less.
Set up to try and pinch my wallet, says Rufus.
Well, that too. I'm missing a few things as well, but I think that it's a little bit more than just basic thievery. I think that...
Is it possible that, like all the other stops, that we are being followed again right from the very beginning, and that not only did we think we found the arm, that somebody else thought we found it too, and they just tried to snatch it from us?
Yeah.
That was my first thought. And in somewhere as crowded as this, it's going to prove exceptionally difficult to see if we're being followed.
I can't see how they are always seem to be one step ahead of us.
Well,
I should mention also that you've seen more than one red fez.
Yeah.
Going into that territory, so.
They have more, they probably have more access to, or better access to, more information on where these things may be. And they're not necessarily being stopped. We're not stopping them, we're just seeking out the pieces for ourselves. We're coming up across opposition. They're not, as far as I know, as far as we know. We don't know if there's a third party that's seeking these pieces as well.
Yeah, it's true.
Given some of the things we've seen, is it not possible that we've seen these people do some very strange things? Is it perhaps possible that the more pieces of the simulacrum we assemble together in one place, the more that might act as a beacon attracting their attention? Yeah. In some way that we don't understand. I'm loath to use the M word. But
Marble.
Michigos. Certainly, when we read the La Imagina Diaboli, in that the sorcerer had some means of scrying the location of the
Right.
Of the group of knights. And I mean, if we're working on the understanding that sorcerer, possibly that sorcerer, and the original Tilius Corvus are the same person or the same entity or some continuation of the same tradition or something, then it would be reasonable to assume that some means that ritual may have survived, either amongst a cult or whatever this creature is, or I'm loath to even suggest that it might be someone who's lived for hundreds of years, but we don't know what he looked like. So I mean, we have no images to work from. But one thing I have been wondering, speaking of images, and certainly this goes back to the first book we found being called La Imaginée Diabolique. The simulacrum was obviously constructed for purpose. It was obviously constructed to a specific design. And it has the ability to mimic the appearance of other people. But I've just been wondering for a while now, whose face is or was the face of the simulacrum?
I don't know.
I don't really know that.
Yeah, we haven't come across any lore that would point to that.
Certainly not like modern day, right? Because the only description I can remember is from the book. Mm-hmm. And in that, am I correct in remembering that he was already like under some sort of disguise when we found him in that top room?
You're referring to L'Imagine del Diavolo?
Yeah.
Yes. Sedevkar, was that who we found?
Sedevkar was disguised as one of the knights that you had fought beside. I don't remember his name at the moment, but that was why he was able to gain control of so many other soldiers, because they all believed in who he was.
The two theories that would present themselves, assuming that what we've read in these books has a grounding in fact, and it's not just a symbolic position where whoever's the leader of the cult is the figurative inheritor of that mantle. But assuming that we sort of read between the lines a bit with what we've read so far, two theories present themselves. One being that some force or entity is inhabiting a lineage of sorcerers, for want of a better word, from Tilius Corvus to Sedevkar to what was the count's name? Count Fenelik.
Fenelik, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That this thing is just inhabiting people through history, and those are the people this thing, this force, whatever, inhabited. Or a slightly more far-fetched theory would be that Tullius Corvus, Sedevkar, Count Fenelik, and others throughout history who have been connected with this object are in fact one and the same person.
I was thinking that. Go ahead. You can finish your.
I was just thinking that, I mean, we've seen that in the last book we read, that and this was borne out, I think, by your experiences with the Doctor, that there are. Esoteric means by which organs and things can be replaced, and that in turn can extend people's life expectancy. So it would seem reasonable to assume that this person who is essentially, I suppose, the head of the cult would extend his life expectancy seemingly without restraint. I don't know, that it could be that we're dealing with someone who is unfathomably old.
I have one thought that may discount that, in that we only just the other day discovered the knife that has been hidden for hundreds of years, thousands of years. So if they need the knife in order to do these sort of miraculous operations of transferring body parts, then you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. Similarly, if the magic is linked to the simulacrum, well, the simulacrum's been split up. That couldn't be it. That's a very good point, actually. That's a big flaw in mine.
Actually, go ahead and do an idea roll. Frank and Elizabeth.
Oh, God, nearly fell off the seat. 31. Yes, that's a...
Yeah, 32.
That's a hard, I think.
I'll just say that you've seen evidence of organ transplants before this,
yep,
that didn't have anything at all to do with the knife.
Yep, I was aware of that too.
It does seem, doesn't it, that the manipulation of flesh is central to this.
Yes, I would agree with that.
That's definitely their thing, isn't it? Wasn't there something about someone before we ran into you? I think Rupert brings this point up. Before we ran into you, wasn't there some cove who got his lungs replaced or something?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That was back in
Milan, was it?
Milan, yeah.
With the opera house?
Yeah, that was back there.
So maybe they don't need the knife. Maybe that's just a part of the puzzle, but it's not.
Maybe the knife does something to a point where it perfects the operation. Some of these were sort of hack jobs.
Maybe the knife just makes it easier.
That's true, because we did find evidences like scars and such on their backs and their chests. Right.
Yeah, the scars, and then of course I think that might have been through magic. He ended up having a heart attack or something of this sort.
Well, they have certain abilities anyway. Yeah. We have no way of knowing what they're capable of. If they were to get the simulacrum and the knife, there may be all manner of unforeseen abilities that they're capable of tapping into if they have all of those objects.
Mm-hmm.
Things that perhaps wouldn't be readily apparent.
That's a good point.
So, more than ever, I think we need to be on our guard.
I'll just throw out, too, that I'm sort of leaning... I'm not discounting what you just said, but I'm also suggesting that it's not necessarily one entity that is prolonging its lifespan all these years, but rather it's just a corruption. So, like, the doctor that we ran into who had the knife, he pretty much clearly, I think, was on the verge of going insane by creating these hybrid human animals, and it was as if he snapped out of it when we started to talk to him, and I'm wondering if maybe it's just like a corruption of their mind or something.
Mm-hmm.
It could be the objects that are corrupting them as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does anyone recall? I mean, usually with a cult, it's centered around some form of religion of some sort. Does anyone recall any sort of a name or entity that has been associated with the Skinless Ones? I know in the last book we read, they were just talking about Satanism, but. I can't think of any, but I just wanted to see, am I missing something, or is it just...
Well, they've called themselves the Brotherhood of the Skin. There have been references to the Skinless One.
Right.
Well, I don't think there's been a name. If there was, I'm not remembering it.
And there was, if you recall... in the Narratio de Tullius Corvus, there was a mention in that of an enormous statue of a skinned man.
Yeah.
And so that seems to be some sort of cult image.
I wonder if we can start looking into that. Like, we're kind of... Or at least I have anyway. I keep looking for threads to find out who the cult is by looking for other cult members. But I'm wondering now if we should maybe like change our line of thought and look into possible religions that are associated with this. And maybe we can find a particular god or gods that are... I don't know. Just a thought.
Well, in... I think it was the... I imagine I did Diablo. There was mention, I think it was in that, there was mention of, was it a tattoo or was it a symbol? I seem to remember a symbol somewhere of a sort of a cat of nine tails or a sort of multi-branched whip or something.
Hmm.
I imagine that.
No, that rings a bell with me too. I can't place it.
I'm sure I recall something like that. And that kind of image seems to be. I think references to skinning, flaying, that sort of thing. I know there are Indian groups of Indian sadhus. I think the Agori or some groups practice a form of flagellation, ritual flagellation. As do some Catholic sects. But it's all that immediately comes to mind. Actually, I think there's similar mortification rituals among certain Sufi communities, I believe, as well.
Yeah. Perhaps we can. Well, one, we wanted to go to the museum and look around there, but perhaps we can also head to the library and maybe do a bit of research trying to cross-reference ancient religions that dealt with or had maybe some skinless deity.
You know, one thing we need in this game is something called a memory roll. Go ahead and do an idea roll. We'll call that a memory roll in this case.
Buzz.
82
out of
80.
And
I got 80 out of
80. Is that for all of us?
What's that?
Is that for all of us? Should I roll too?
Yeah, go ahead and roll.
Oh, it's all of us. I'll roll for Rupert as well.
87.
Jesus.
Rupert's got it.
Rupert's got 17 out of 70.
Okay. Rupert says something along the lines of, "Don't we already have one scroll?"
We do. Yeah, let's take a look at the
scroll. Isn't there a mention in that in the translation of the skinless one?
Oh.
Is it also mentioned in there? This, by the way, is one of my favorite props. Because it's really a scroll.
Yes, well, let's have a look at the scroll then, shall we?
Yeah.
You should have notes somewhere, I hope.
Have I looked at the scroll before?
I'd imagine we would have shown you.
Now this is which of the scrolls is this?
It's the one associated with
the head.
Yeah.
Scroll of the head. Oh, that'd be quite interesting. Does it give a description of the head?
Let me read this to you, since I assume you probably have it somewhere. But the scroll was written by Sedevkar, the Asmanli. It concerns an item in his possession, the Sedevkar Simulacrum. In this scroll, Sedevkar prophesies that he will soon lose the Simulacrum, and so praises it and makes a record of it in a set of five scrolls. This scroll is the first of the five, and is referred to as the Scroll of the Head, being the thoughts and history of Sedevkar. The four missing scrolls are the Scroll of the Belly, concerned with the worship of a being known as the Skinless One, the Scroll of the Legs, a series of body-affecting magics, the foundation on which Sedevkar's power was built, the Scroll of the Right Hand, a ritual which awoke the statue, and is the driving force of Sedevkar's power, and the Scroll of the Left Hand, containing a ritual which balances his power, a necessary ongoing sacrifice. The scroll is a rambling, insane document. The author has not set down events in any form or order, making it difficult to follow. The most detailed descriptions in the document dwell on the torture and skinning of human beings.
So, certain aspects of those could certainly be said to have a bearing on what we've just been discussing.
The Lord of Naked Flesh.
So the Scroll of the Belly is the one that outlines the nature of this thing, skinless one, whatever it is.
Worship of a being known as the skinless one.
There is a saint, isn't there? Who was skinned. Who is often shown with his skin draped over his arm. And I cannot remember which saint that is, but I can't help but wonder whether worshippers of the skinless one might be drawn to that particular saint. Is perhaps a cover for their activities. Well, I'm sure if any of us encountered a statue of a skinned saint, we would set alarm bells running straight away. So. Well, shall we proceed to the museum then?
I'll give that one to you because it's something that Dr. Elizabeth would probably know. St. Bartholomew, one of the 12 apostles, was skinned on that.
Yeah. That's right.
Also a very popular saint, so there's lots of churches of St. Bartholomew.
Why was he skinned?
Oh, yes, of course. In London, there's a very famous hospital. St. Bartholomew's.
How? I don't know. Probably the Romans tied him up and skinned him. All of the apostles except John met horrible ends. All right, what would you guys like to do next? You have done some speculating, but you're still in the market. Did you want to continue looking around? The day is still early.
Yes, I mean, we might possibly find...
Well, we can continue to look around. I know we were talking about going to the museum.
We could combine the two and have a look around the market on our way to the museum.
Mm-hmm. Would anyone care for a Turkish delight? They're quite good.
Well, yes.
Actually, you arrived in Belgrade at 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you just checked in and then you went out looking. So I guess it's probably about 3 o'clock in the afternoon right now.
In that case, I just read. Yeah, the museum is open from 3 till 5. 9 a.m. to 12, and then 3 to 5.
Oh, well, shall we, let's take a wander over then.
And we have a name, too, from Beddoe's original document, where he gave us the name of the curator. It was Dr. Milovan Todorovic?
Todorovic. Yeah. If you see IC on the end of a name in Serbia, it's itch, even though it's IC. It means sun up. Todorovic would be son of Theodore. Yeah.
Okey-dokey.
Which is funny because when a woman marries the man, she takes his last name, so she becomes son of Theodore too.
I don't have any children. What do you mean?
All right, so I'm sorry, anything more in the market, or are you going to head towards the museum?
I head towards the museum.
Okay. Let's see. The museum, I don't believe the museum is very far away. Where's the map? You're at the Great Marketplace. The National Museum is literally like across the street. The bazaar is set up in a big, big square, and now just literally on one side of the square is the museum.
Okay.
So, okay, so you head over to the museum. And it's a big museum, a beautiful building. Even when you walk inside, the floors are marble. There are statues here and there. Dr. Elizabeth, you immediately identify some, you know, beautiful pieces of Roman and Byzantine artwork that rival things that you've seen at the Louvre.
Good Lord.
What would you guys like to do? You're in the front door.
Should we try and find this... Should we have a walk around first, or
maybe they have guided tours?
Yes.
Yes, they would. The museum would take you hours to walk through if you.
In particular, what was the last museum that we were in?
Last one you were in was in Trieste, I think. The little art museum with the garden outside that was all freezing in.
I will actively be looking for any sort of artwork that resembles that. The thing with the snake.
The snake armed people?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, it's a stretch, but.
You've got about 2 hours before they close. So we could say there's one last tour if you wanted to do that.
Okay.
Tour will take an hour and a half. Is that what you'd like to do?
Sure.
Okay. You go on the tour. And as I say, especially when if you're looking, especially for sculpture and things along that lines, much of it is just exquisite. It's a treasure trove of Roman and Byzantine artwork. Some of it from many of the different periods in classical art. There's also rooms with paintings, and there's all sorts of things that you look at. But after about an hour and a half, it's a museum. And you've only seen part of it, after an hour and a half. And there, nothing too seriously studied. You go into a room, you look around, you get the description of what's in there, and then you move to the next room because it's a tour.
And nothing catches our eye.
Well, everything catches your eye because it's beautiful, but nothing stands out. Like, if you're looking for a bit of the simulacrum, you don't say anything like that.
Well, given that in our guide we have access to someone who speaks English, perhaps we could ask them where we might find Dr. Todorovic.
Oh, Dr. Todorovic. He is the curator of. Classical and Byzantine statuary. He is here. He's probably in his workroom, or he may have left for the day already. It's kind of late.
Who would we talk to about meeting the doctor?
Well, if you go up to the reception, I'm sure they could set up an appointment if you like. If you need to speak,
thank you very much. Thank you.
So, I show you the rest. We have this very big painting over here, and this little itty bitty one over here, and this big statue, and this little statue. Thank you.
Emergency exits are located here, here,
this modern piece that says Excite above the door, it's best viewed from the other side. All right, so your tour is over. They're closing up the museum. It's closing in about a half an hour. But
can we try and make an appointment with Dr. Stodovich?
There's somebody at reception. They check the times, and they set an appointment for you for 3 o'clock in the afternoon tomorrow. And they just tell you to come to reception, and they'll direct you where to go. And with that, within 10 minutes or so, you're ushered out the door.
Have we been followed?
Yeah, I was wondering that too.
There's lots of people, but go ahead and do a spot hidden for me.
Right, I got a 13 out of 47.
You've kept your eyes open, and your eyes are constantly drawn to anybody who happens to be wearing a fez or something that's, red.
That's pretty much to everybody.
And none of them look like they're observing you. You know, they're just going about, you know, their own things. Serbia, Serbo-Croatia, Yugoslavia, which is what it was about to be called at the time. It's a melting pot of people. So every ethnicity is there. You just look like anybody in the crowd, and they all look like anybody in the crowd. You know, there's nobody standing in the corner shiftly twirling their mustache or anything. You don't see anything.
Why can't villains act like real villains? Stand in a corner with twisting their mustaches.
Yes, and then when you confront them, they talk for 5 minutes before they actually shoot right. You.
Which we be very, very quiet and just see if we listen very, very carefully and see if there's anyone in that anywhere in our vicinity going, yeah, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah, no. You don't see anybody. You see people who you want to be suspicious, but that guy in the fez over there is completely interested in that painting. He doesn't seem to have looked in your direction, not once. So that guy over there is talking to his wife and their kids, and so you don't see anything suspicious.
I'm suddenly very suspicious of Shriners.
Don't give away the whole story. It's the Shriners behind everything.
They're up to something with their tiny cars.
Shriner stands for skin, him, and no.
Well, we have the name from Betters and Smythe, but we don't have anything beyond that, so it's going to be awkward just having a meeting with him tomorrow.
Right. Well, we can figure something out. Are there? I imagine there's churches around.
Oh yeah, they're Serbian Orthodox or Greek Orthodox, more or less the same thing. Big, beautiful churches. I don't know if I showed you a picture of Belgrade. It's a beautiful city.
Oh, yeah.
It's lovely, isn't it?
There's also a very large a castle and a park that people spend. You know, they like to walk around, and it's in your book. So what would you guys like to do?
5 p.m. Is it too late to go to the library?
Probably.
Should we just get dinner and call
it? They open really early in the morning, but they close at 5.
Well,
they open at proper time and close at an improper time. Respect.
You were saying that we didn't really have any idea of what we could discuss with Dr. Teodorovich, but I'm just going to suggest something. I don't know how you know, what the others will feel about this, but we have yet not approached anyone for an expert opinion on the simulacrum, and I'm not suggesting we take all of the pieces with us, but I wonder if perhaps we might possibly be able to take one of the pieces with us.
It's a good idea
to just ask him to have a look at it.
From an artistic point of view, you mean?
Well, he's an expert on classical statuary, mm-hmm. I believe. And he's recommended to us. At the very least, it might assure him of our authenticity credentials if we come bearing a limb. I mean, or alternatively, we could be walking into a trap. But I'd like to think that we aren't.
I mean, it's dangerous to the point where if they wanted to take it from us as we were transporting it, they could. But if we were properly armed and prepared for that, it might not be a bad idea.
Mm.
Well, so far,
properly armed.
I meant to do that.
Well, if you have the afternoon, evening to decide, and most of tomorrow morning and part of the afternoon.
On the way back to dinner, can we stop and pick up a newspaper too?
I'm sure Eldridge
would want to pick up a newspaper and look at it.
Mm-hmm. And he can get one in Russian, which let's see. I'm sure I have something here about what's going on in Belgrade. And I don't. So Belgrade's very interesting. Things are going on all over the place. People are dying. People are having babies.
Politics, blah, blah, blah.
Politics, yeah. So let's say you have your meal and you are now back at your hotel, unless you wanted to do something else.
I can't really think of anything to do.
Yeah, me either.
Okay, so you're back at the hotel. Back up in your rooms.
I take it we've checked our luggage.
Yes, everything is there. Standard. It's as I recall, you put it downstairs in the vaults. Everything is fine.
And the knife?
If wherever the knife is, it's still there.
Okay.
You have that, right? Did you want to? Is that going to be in the vault too, or are you keeping that separate?
No, I'm keeping that. So far, nobody, I mean, our luggage has been broken into before, and nobody has taken the pieces, but this particular knife seems very vulnerable. People have been after it for a while, so
Are you keeping it on you?
I
say with a raised eyebrow.
I have it in my room and it's tucked away.
Okay.
Why? It's no need to worry. I won't use the knife.
Just wondering if it's one of those, you know, if it's a cursed item, you might not want to be handling it and all that.
I'm just wondering, how do you wrap up something that cuts through anything? What's the mechanics of that?
You do it very carefully.
No, that's not so unusual. As long as you're not putting pressure on it.
Yes, of course.
You wouldn't want to point it down and let it go.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, I mean, if these guys aren't doing anything, I will hit the bed.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. We're staying at the Hotel Europa, aren't we?
But before we do, anything in the paper? We did pick up a newspaper, so anything interesting in the news?
Nothing interesting at all in the paper.
Okay.
We can hold another silence.
Yeah, because that works soon. Very well for Dr. Keith.
So nothing? You're going to go to bed?
Maybe just a good night's sleep for the change. Go to bed a little early. Have some brandy. We've been on the run a lot.
Some vodka.
Yes, Rupert's definitely in the mood for some brandy. Although Elizabeth's just going to quietly smoke a pipe before she goes to bed. And this lovely Balkan tobacco she's just got hold of.
All right. Well, you all sleep. Nothing happens in the middle of the night. And you wake up the next morning and you're ready for breakfast.
Splendid.
It's a beautiful hotel. Very nice. Very clean. Very well run. The food is excellent.
Well, that was quite refreshing, wasn't it? It was quite nice to have a decent night's sleep for once.
You can all get a sanity point back if you've lost any.
Yes, I think. Yes, Rupert gets one back.
All right. What are your plans today?
So we have the meeting.
Weren't you going to meet Peter, the kid?
Yeah, I think Rupert set it up for 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
Yes.
So maybe we could go to the library and have him translate whatever needs to be translated.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't know what to do at the library. It's just a suggestion.
Well, I mean, we can also do the, I think we were going to look at cross-referencing some of the other religions, seeing if there's any mention of like a skinless deity or anything that resembles this particular cult. Mm-hmm. Might give us a bit more information on what we're dealing with.
What I'm hoping is that maybe there's another name associated with this god that is more familiar to us. You know, because a lot of times they have different names and all that, like Baal and all that.
Yeah.
All right. So you're going to head to the library. You're gonna wait for Peter to join you. And he does, and he's very eager to show you around town. Are there any sites that you'd like to see? Do you want to see the castle and the gardens? Do you want to go to the bazaar? Do you want to have your fortune told by the gypsies? Do you want to go to the library?
The fortune is being told by the gypsies. That sounds cool.
I think Eldritch might have a problem with that.
But it's all right in that area. At least if you head towards the bazaar, if you head towards the Calamagnan Gardens, that's not very far. It's just down the street, but it's down at the end of the street. It's a couple of miles. Okay. What would you like to do first? The library is also not very far from where you are.
Well, you want to get the research out of the way, and then we can look other places. Or how do you
So you arrive at the library around 9:30, and it's open, and it's been open for hours. What would you like to research, and then go ahead and do a library roll?
Well, the first thing I wanted to research is to see if there's any sort of correlations between this particular deity and maybe some other ones, maybe ancient Egyptian or Babylonian or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, do your roll.
And I got an 05.
05.
So that is critical.
What you find is that there are quite a number of different religions that at one time or another had human sacrifice. A few of them had to do with skinning. Something kind of odd that it's right on the verge of making some sort of sense, but it could be just, a false data. But it seems to you that in a lot of different cultures, there are a variety of religious practices, and then there's one that is extremely dark and usually rejected by the majority, but it often had to do with human sacrifice. You'll find this in Egypt, you find it in India, you find it in Asia, and a few other places. But nothing really specific. And you do find it in Europe as well, in Rome. But a particular deity, not necessarily mentioned or...
I mean, it's worth a shot. Did you guys want to research anything?
I'm quite interested to learn if there are any books by Dr. Teodorich.
Yes, in fact, there are a couple. All of them, both of them dealing with the identification of Roman and or Byzantine pieces of art. One is in a kind of a general manual on preservation and cleaning, and the other one's on identification. They're very scholarly.
Archie Ho.
Lots of references to other works and pieces. Criticisms also of other works on preservation, especially of certain types of sculpture. And he's definitely an expert.
Well, that's good to know.
Anything else?
So I don't have a good library skill, so I'm going to just go to the librarian, or did we already discuss, do they have like a card catalog back then?
Sure.
So I'm going to just look up Sedevkar.
Okay. You don't find any reference to it.
I didn't think so, but just in that off chance. Oh, here it is.
That's because in Serbian it's Sedevkarovic.
And it's spelled without an H, so I'm completely baffled and thrown off by that.
Spelled with three J's and a K. All right, so you don't find anything on Sedevkar.
Yeah.
Anything else? And of course, Peter's helping you with all of this.
Mm-hmm.
No,
I can't think of anything.
No. Okay, you can always come back if you think of something. Mm-hmm. It's very close. All right, so we'll say you leave. Oh, what would you like to do next? The bazaar is across the street. The gypsy fortune teller, the castle and gardens. Something interesting about the castle and gardens is, let me see if it's in the guidebook. It says Belgrade. The favorite afternoon promenade of the Belgradarians. This park is laid out to the south of the fortress with fine flower beds and bronze busts of poets and savants. A military band plays there on Sundays. There is a lovely view from the promenade, Fikir Bayir, which is charmingly named the Slope of Dreaming. A long staircase descends from here to the river Save. Just, it sounds interesting.
Does sound rather nice.
Haha, is that?
You know,
the dream world? Isn't there something about descending a long set of stairs, 7 foot steps or something?
Yeah, why don't we have a look then?
Be nice to just sit in the park for a while, to be honest.
All right. So you're going to head down towards the park.
Are we going to pass the fortune teller on the way to the park?
Oh, well, she's literally across the street from where you are right now. The park and the castle are about 2 miles down the street.
Why don't we stop at the fortune teller first?
Okay. I'm game. I'm nervous, but I'm game.
Sounds like a wheeze, says Rupert. Come on, Keith, old girl, you up for it? Oh, for goodness sake.
The fortune teller, the reaction that you sort of have from Peter is, you know, that he tells you that gypsies are just people who are going to steal you your money left and right. Do you believe in that sort of stuff?
What, that they'll steal my money left and right?
No. Oh, that fortune tellers.
It's just for entertainment purposes.
Okay. All right, so you approach the fortune teller's tent, and there's a young man outside, and he stops you, and he tells you that it will be the equivalent of, you know, $5 in American money, or whatever English the equivalent would be, and he tells you that that the fortune teller is Madame Magdalena Petrovich, and she is a great seer into the future.
So who is she the son of?
Well, she's married to a man who's the son of Peter. All right, so you're going to pay and go in, all of you?
Well, yes. Elizabeth is going to pay and then keep a tight grasp on her purse.
Okay.
I will pay your way, Dr. Lisbeth. I know you don't want to give them the money.
It's kind of exactly what you'd expect. It's all, you know, carpets on the carpet, a tent, very colorful on the inside, a big table in the center, lanterns with colored glass in them so that they make the room look magical with candles lit. And there's a cage over to the side with a chicken in it. Looks like a black chicken, except for his bill and his toes. It's black. Madame Magdalena, she comes dramatically through, you know, a curtain in the back. She's an old woman, probably easily in her late 70s. And at first she speaks Serbian. And Peter translates, and when she hears him translating, she's like, I speak a little English. I can help you. I can manage in English. Now then, she says, what would you like Madame Magdalena to do for you? You want to know your future, your past? Do you want to know, do you have some curse that hangs over you that you would like me to magically take away from you?
Sure, I'm game. See if you can take away this curse.
What is the curse? Should I tell you what the curse is?
Yes, you should. She says,
so please. And she looks at you for a moment, and she then turns to the cage with the chicken in it. And she opens up the front of the cage, and she reaches swiftly inside, and she pulls out an egg. And it's a brown egg. And she closes the cage back up and says something to the chicken in Serbian. I don't speak Serbian, so I don't want to be offensive, but she says something to it. She takes the egg, and she says, which one of you would represent the group?
I guess I will.
Okay. She.
Frank, do you want to?
No. So Dr. Theodore?
Yeah, I'll do it.
She takes your hand in hers, and she moves the egg over your hand like this. And she says, you are a doctor, yes?
Yes. Yes, I'm a doctor.
And
how did she know?
And she says, you are American, but not all of you. She takes the egg, and she breaks it into a bowl. And then she takes her finger, and she sort of mixes it around a little bit so that it breaks up the yolk. And she looks into it. Now, go ahead and do an idea roll, at least for that at this point.
Yeah. 33 out of 80.
Yeah, you're dressed like a doctor, so.
Yeah.
And she's heard you all speak. She's heard you all speak, so. She knows you're some of you from America and some of you are from England. Okay. She goes, okay. Now she does this, and she's looking down into this messed up egg. And
were there two yolks or one?
Just one. And maybe a little blood spot or something. But she's looking into it, and she says, you are on a long journey. And she says a few other things to you that are very generalized. Obviously, you're on a long journey. You're in Serbia, and you're American, and you're English. And she says something very, very odd. She says, "That is a man with a long nose who has shown you a great kindness." You came here for one reason, but you have stayed for another. She mixes a little bit more. You are seeking something, something that once was whole, but is now apart. There is someone, no, more than one, trying to hinder your journey. She mixes it some more and she says, "I can see a long road still ahead of you, and there is danger. There are three ahead of you who will greet you that are as old as mankind, and another with three faces. You should fear him." And one of you do a spot, or you all do a spot hidden.
Pass.
I failed that one.
Frank?
I got a 44 out of 45. And okay. Rupert got a 6 out of whatever Rupert's spot hidden is.
Since Dr. Dawkins is front and center, he's kind of mesmerized, he's not mesmerized, but he's watching what she's doing and trying to analyze how she might be picking some of this up. The three of you notice that that black chicken is staring at you in a very bizarre way for an animal. It's just staring at you. And with that, she suddenly looks exhausted, and she says, "That's all I can see. I do not know what some of that means, but that is what it says. That is what I have taken from the cosmos."
Is the chicken's name Philip?
The chicken's name Philip? No.
Good.
Will the chicken be named Philip?
That's what I'm wondering.
Black Philip from the movie The Witch.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah, I forgot about that movie.
She rings a little bell, and when she does, the guy who was out front steps inside, and he says, "Thank you very much. Madame Magdalena now is very tired. Please, thank you for coming." And he says something mystical like, take the words that she has given you to heart. They mean something for you. But that all sounds very routine. And you step outside of the tent.
Well, at least you didn't say you're going to meet someone tall, dark, and handsome.
Nope, that was not in the egg.
All right, well, where to now? We're going to the castle, right?
Was the chicken looking at anyone in particular or at all?
You were all kind of crowded together at one side, so you think it just had one of those. Actually, I forget that chickens are not predators, so their eyes are on the sides of their head. So it was looking at you more like this.
That's even creepier.
Yeah. But it was almost completely unmoving as it stared at you.
And it was definitely a live chicken.
Oh, yeah.
A stuffed chicken.
Yeah, no, it was clucking around a couple seconds ago when she grabbed the egg.
I'm picturing Eldritch was just like, nope, nope, and he walks out.
So well, what would you guys like to do? You gonna,
yes, you gonna leave? Where are we going, to the park next?
Yes, I'd quite like to go to the park after that.
All right.
At the very least, to get the smell of incense out of my clothes.
All right, Kalemegdan Park. It's a beautiful park. Looks like this. With the castle.
Oh, nice.
Ooh. And write that down. All right. You find the place that's referred to as the Slope of Dreaming, and Peter tells you the local legend is, if you fall asleep on this bank, that some people have claimed that they've entered a different world when they were there.
That sounds strangely familiar.
And of course, he says it is the place of poets and artists and people like that.
I knew I remembered something about that. There's something is about there walking down 700 steps or something.
Is there anyone sleeping there at the moment?
Oh, I forgot. I should have presented that to everybody. Anyways, stop. There's people with picnics and picnic blankets, and there's a lot of snow, so I guess they're not picnicking at the moment. That doesn't make any sense. The picture was very green, but of course what you're seeing is the winter version of that.
There are very hardy people who go out and picnic.
They're like the Russians who go swimming in the ice.
Right.
Unless you want to do something here, you can spend more or less most of the day walking around. It's very beautiful, but you don't really see anything significant. You don't see any people staring at you. And everybody seems very pleasant as they walk by you. They nod or they give you a hello, good morning, good afternoon.
I don't trust this place. Everybody's too friendly here.
Well, I mean, we're essentially tourists. We should perhaps tourist until it's time for our appointment. Have we brought the piece of the simulacrum with us, or would we need to go back to the hotel?
I think you'd probably want to do that before. Yeah, you didn't want to walk around with it all day.
Yeah.
Was there what, like about 5 pounds a piece, right?
A couple of pounds, maybe 5 pounds. The smallest piece would be probably one of the arms. This one.
Okay.
Yes, I found all my props recently. So
if we continue touring around the city, and then when the time is appropriate, we'll return to the hotel and go suitably armed to the meeting.
Suitably armed. All right. So you're taking one of the arms. How are you taking it? What is it? How are you transporting?
We have a canvas bag.
Okay, it's in a canvas bag. That makes sense. Wrapped up, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
All right. You arrive around 2:45 at the museum, and one of the reception people is like, "Yes, you have an appointment. Let me take you back. So she takes you down a corridor, and you can tell that the museum may have at one point been another building entirely, and was turned into a museum, because people don't usually decorate their hallways as beautifully as the architecture is in this room. But it eventually, there's you go through a door, and it opens up into a very large room. I'd say, you know, at least a two-story high roof, and it's a basically a rectangle with windows on the sides, and in the center of it, there are work tables, and there's a desk, and there is a man. He looks like he's probably approaching 50 years old, with a big beard and mustache, standing on a ladder. And he is cleaning a beautiful statue. And I'll show you the statue. Just as she comes through the door, she says, Dr. Todorovich, your 3 o'clock appointment is here. And he's very busy cleaning, but the statue is beautiful. It's fully life size. And he's like he hasn't even batted an eye now that she's come in and you've all stepped in, but he finishes cleaning something on the face. And he cleans his hands, and he starts down the ladder, and he says, "Yes, what is this about, please? There was nothing left to tell me what this meeting was about." And he comes over, and he's looking at you, with kind of a, you know, who the hell are you? Look in his face.
Oh, sorry. I was admiring your Capitoline Venus.
Oh, you know what it is, then? That's good.
It's the what is it they call it? The Venus Pudicia.
Very good.
Yes.
Can you identify the age, perhaps?
A modest Venus. Well, looking by the style of it, I imagine it's probably 4th or 5th century.
Very good. You have a good eye. I'm sorry. Who are you now?
Oh, I'm Dr. Elizabeth Keith. These are my friends, Dr. Dawkins, Mr. Coates, and Mr. Hamilton Smythe.
Ah. Very good to meet you. Now, he has kind of a smile on his face now that you've impressed him. What can I do for you?
Well, we were... your name was mentioned to us by... who mentioned his name to us?
It was in the note from Smythe and Bettis.
Oh, right, yes. It was mentioned Professor Smythe and his man Bettis.
Ah, I know Professor Smythe very well. Yes, if Professor, please come sit down, please. And he offers you refreshments, basically probably raki or something like that. Yes, please. How is Professor Smythe?
He's not in the best of health.
Oh, that is terrible. He's a very nice man, very good man, very intelligent man.
How do you come about knowing him?
Oh, well, he is rather well known because of the university. You know, he gives you a background, you know, when he was studying Greek art, he ran across the professor and was impressed with his knowledge, and they became friends, and they corresponded over the years on various topics. And But yes, he knows who he is. He knows his academic credentials
and that would check out with what we don't know.
Yeah, that's he doesn't know any. He doesn't know anything about recent events, but
yeah.
And he's also so he asks you in turn, you know, who are you in relationship? Are you students? Colleagues?
We are colleagues. We're members of a society.
Oh,
along with the professor.
I seem to recall that he was part of a society of investigators in the unusual that when he was in the United States. I thought he had given that up a long time ago.
Not entirely, no.
Well, what can I do for you? How can I help you? You seem to know a lot about the sculpture. Have you been to the through the museum?
We've been on a tour. I'm looking forward to having a more in-depth look at the museum.
We have some magnificent specimens. Some that you this is one of the most beautiful pieces that we have. It's in perfect condition. It's better than the one that's in the Louvre.
It's extraordinary. It really is marvelous. I wonder. Sorry, is he a doctor or a professor?
He's a doctor.
He's a doctor. I wonder, Doctor. Have you ever heard of a rather obscure reference? I think known as the Sedevkar simulacrum.
It does not sound familiar to me at all. Is it a statue?
Yes, it's a very unusual statue. Broken into six pieces.
Many pieces, of course, are recovered when they are broken, and some of the pieces have been restored and put back together. It sounds interesting. What is so special about this piece?
Well,
what culture? When does it date from?
It's the Byzantine.
Byzantine, yes.
I think.
Well, I am. Then you are with the right person. I am an expert in the Byzantine.
Now, when was it made? Do we know when it was made?
I don't think we know.
Well, we know it was made somewhere between... When was Tullius Corvus? Was that... 330 AD, between 330 AD... No, hang on, because Sedevkar was meant to have made it, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So it would be somewhere around the late 12th, early 13th century.
Oh. That's a very interesting period. I'm surprised. You know, much of the sculpture and artwork from Byzantium was stolen during the Crusades. I wouldn't be surprised if it were something that was stolen, and you say it was broken into pieces, so it was probably managed pieces of it to end up all over the place. That it sounds interesting, but it might be difficult to distinguish it from any other piece because there are a lot of statues. We have a huge, huge amount of statues. I have a supplier that is able to provide me with some amazing pieces, probably from an area that is not well known, you know. Much of this country is filled with areas that are very, very, very little exploration.
I'll look to the other three. Wayne, is Dr. Dawkins carrying the?
Yeah, I have it.
Are you
in particular? I'll look to Dr. Dawkins and.
Are you hoping to find a piece of this? Oh, what did you call it? The simulacrum.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, you know, I don't mean to be, I don't mean to sound in any way. I'm not sure what the word is in English. A great many things were stolen from this country during the last war, during the Great War, and our country is very, very strict on anything being removed from the country without the proper authorization. If you were going to attempt to take any kind of piece of artwork or statuary out of the country, you are going to need to have the proper documents, you know.
Yes, yes, of course, yes. Well, I can assure you we're I'm an archaeologist. I'm a historian. I'm not a looter.
Well, do you already have the documentation, or if not, you will need to obtain it from the Bureau of National Treasures.
We have no idea if such a thing even exists, and if it exists, whether we would find it. So obviously, documentation is something we would approach when and where we actually found something. We do, however, have a piece of the statue which we came upon elsewhere before we entered your country.
Do you have it with you? May I see it?
Yes, we wondered if you'd give us our professional opinion on it. It is rather an unusual object, and I shall look across to Dr. Dawkins,
and I'll bring it out of the bag.
Okay, when you bring it out, it is of course very dark purple, and he is stunned. You know, he's like, what is it made of? It has an incredible luster. And I assume you've set it on the table.
Yeah.
So he's looking at it and he's at a loss for words. He's like, it is exquisite, but I don't think that it's Byzantine. The proportions are quite wrong for. And you realize that he hasn't realized that he's seeing an identical copy of his own arm, but in purple. You know, the proportions are all wrong. I must admit, I have never seen anything like this, composed of this material, whatever it may be, some sort of porcelain or glass. May I touch it? May I pick it up?
Yeah.
And he kind of assesses the weight, and he's like, he's once again just, I don't know what it could be made of. It's not marble, absolutely not. It would be much heavier. It's not ceramic. Maybe it's hollow. And he sets it back down very gingerly, and he says, it's possible that something like this might be found by... I have never seen anything like this in a museum anywhere. But as I say, there are many places in my country where there are treasure troves of this kind of statuary that that are as yet, you know, unexplored. I have a supplier myself who, you know, I use the museum's funds to purchase pieces from him. It's possible that he may know where something like this comes from. But, and he looks a little wary for a moment. He says, I really would feel it necessary for you to have the paperwork in place before I would reveal any kind of my source. You understand?
Yes, of course, of course. And where did you say we would go to apply for that pay? I mean, really, we hadn't...
You would get that at the Bureau of National Treasures.
Okay.
I don't exactly know where. I of course, don't have any need to take anything out of the country, but that is where you would get the permits. I am amazed. Please keep me informed. I should be extremely interested in seeing this put together. It's very unusual, but I don't think that it's Byzantine. I don't think it's even Roman.
Has the arm changed colors yet?
Just a little bit. It's getting a little... He hasn't really noticed it yet. He's beginning to start to look at some of the details in the material that you guys have noticed. You sure you want him to realize?
Dr. Dawkins, are you trying to get him to do a sanity roll?
No, I don't want him to. I was just wondering if he realized it yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Can I ask the doctor?
Which doctor?
Good point. The art doctor. Todorovich.
Todorovich.
I understand what you're saying about the permits and all, but I'm wondering how would that apply that we have a feeling that these pieces have been stolen originally.
So, I understand, and this happens a great deal throughout history.
Right.
But the only thing the government would be interested in is that you're taking something out of Serbia that was found in Serbia.
But what if it's come to the knowledge that whoever has it in Serbia has it illegally? Would you still need permits at that point?
I'm afraid that there would be no way to determine that unless you want to have an investigation launched. And my guess is it would take a couple of years to do that kind of an investigation. It's not a high priority, but until then, they wouldn't release it. They would confiscate it.
Okay, good. Go.
All right. Any other questions for Dr.? We all keep looking at his name.
Dr. T.
Todorovich. Dr. T. That's good.
While he's talking, I'm looking for the obvious. The Venus statue, her arm looks normal.
Oh, yeah.
I just keep waiting for that moment where you say, see, you were in the same room with it, and you just didn't see it.
Well, you also haven't seen anybody exhibiting strange symptoms.
Yeah.
Which does seem to be something that goes along with it. Anything else with Dr. Todorovich? Todorovich. I am sorry to all of the Serbians who are watching. Todorovich.
He wouldn't know. He can't. Sorry, you might have answered this already. He's not going to reveal who might be a collector of something like this.
No, he's very wary considering the stuff that's been stolen from Serbia. just a few, you know, a decade ago. So they're very protective of their national treasures. Very proud of them, obviously. And he doesn't really know you. You've said a few things. You've shown him, you know, your credentials, and you've obviously displayed intelligence, and you know Dr. Smythe, Professor Smythe, so... But he can't risk it at this point.
Doctor, on an entirely unconnected note, I was just wondering...
I assume you've put the arm away.
Yes.
Okay.
Are there any notable statues of St. Bartholomew?
Oh, Santo Bartolomeo. Yes. I believe so. I'm trying to think if there is a good example here in Serbia. You see, in the Orthodox Church, we don't use statuary. We use iconography, icons on the walls, paintings, not statues. You'd probably be more good examples of that in Rome or France or Paris in the Louvre.
I see. So more in the Western tradition, then.
Yes.
No, not to her. It's just a personal interest.
Now, if you want Julius Caesar or Mark Antony, then I could probably show you something. But well, if there is anything else I can do for you, please. And if you obtain your permits, please come back.
Do you think that your contact might be able to possibly help us locate something?
I think that it is probably a good idea, because I have seen some remarkable pieces coming through, and I, of course, don't know where his source is. But I think if you're looking for something very unusual like this, made out of almost purple marble of some sort, not marble, but... perhaps ceramic. It's very, very difficult to identify. But if anyone would know, you would probably be good to know from him.
And he's trustworthy, this fellow. Absolutely. Well, I think we can at least try and obtain a permit.
All right. Good evening. Please. You know how to find your way out.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much for your hospitality, though.
And you get the impression as you're walking out that he goes right back to cleaning. All right, so you're going to leave. It's about 4:00 when you leave. What would you like to do?
Well, Rupert suggests it's time for tea.
Yeah. We're looking to trying to gain these permits.
If you will allow me, I can move ahead. If there's something in particular you want to do this evening, we can do it. Otherwise, we can jump ahead to the next day.
Okay. Everyone else is okay with that?
Can I ask a quick question? Unless it's not quick, then we can come back to it later.
Sure.
I'm a little confused. The permit idea, we're supposed to get a permit. Why?
Because they're going to check you at the borders if you're trying to take any artwork out of the country. They're going to, they would arrest you if they thought you were trying to sneak out with something they'd consider, you know, national treasure.
So does that mean we'd need a permit for the stuff that we'd already brought into the country?
You might.
And would we try to get the permit before we find the piece or after we find the piece?
Well, you're not going to get any information out of Dr. Todorovich until you get the permit.
If we had
a permit, we could get a permit. We could try and get a permit just for the pieces of the simulacrum we've already got.
The permit would probably be a general thing that says that you are not a collector. You are working for the university, or you're a scholar who's studying this. And that would be acceptable. Taking it to sell to somebody, that probably would not work.
Hmm. Well, I mean, we are in essence, we are taking the pieces to Constantinople to restore it.
You're also a qualified archaeologist, so you probably won't have too much trouble.
Okay.
So we can do that first thing.
And I'm only on holiday. I'm still a member of the faculty of Miskatonic University. Mm-hmm. I have tenure now.
Is that what you're going to do? Nothing this evening, but tomorrow you're going to go looking for that. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want to finish up just one little bit. All right. So. It's not as easy as you think it is to find this place. You find that you've gone back and forth between at least five different places that redirect you to the wrong place, or it's not clear exactly where it is. But eventually, around 1 o'clock in the afternoon the next day, you finally locate the Bureau of National Treasures. And it is in the basement of a building down a long corridor. It is just a tiny little room with a guy behind the desk and with filing cabinets and stuff like that. He looks like he's a fairly young fellow. And when you walk in the door, he's sitting behind the desk, and he looks up, and he says, "Yes, can I help you?" And when you look at him, there is a line that goes down his face, across his nose, and to the other side, and his skin is very distinctly a different color on each side. And we'll leave it at that.
Dun, dun, dun.
I knew.
And on that bombshell.
All right, our players included. Well, they didn't include Thomas McKeon because he was working tonight, so he couldn't make it. Also, you've probably noticed that our good friend Simon Ward is not here. He is unfortunately found it necessary to move back to England. So for an indeterminate time, he's not going to be playing with us. He's hoping to rejoin us again once he's settled back down. So our players included Mick Swan, Jeff Wilkins, Wayne Worthy, and myself as the Keeper of the Secrets. Please consider visiting our Patreon account. Just a few dollars a month will help us greatly. We're currently producing 4 shows a week with music and sound effects added in post-production in order to create a richer listener experience. We're also providing audio-only versions of our show free for you to download from Podbean or iTunes. Like, share, and subscribe to our channel for updates on our latest shows, and leave us some comments. We love hearing from you. You'll find links to everything I mentioned in the description below. This is Tom Rayleigh, together with all the members of our gaming group, inviting you to journey with us once again into the darkness for another adventure into the universe of H.P. Lovecraft and the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game. Until next time, good luck and good gaming.